evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinathi Guma. And joining me to wrap this week up are independent analyst Chris Gilmore and Dale Hutchison from APSA Asset Management. Thank you very much to the both of you for joining us. It's quite an interesting time in the markets because the markets are dealing with not just economic data points, but they're also dealing with the slew of U.S. earnings that we're getting for quarter one. Chris, starting with you, there seems to be confusion between the economic data and the corporate earnings that we're seeing. So in the recent while, we've seen the bond market signaling a recession, and then we have U.S. GDP for quarter one that came out declining 1.4%. But then on the other hand, we're seeing all these company earnings coming out and really seeing that a lot of these companies are actually navigating the current environment quite successfully. What are you making then of the confusing data points between economic data and the corporate earnings?
Zanati, it really depends on which companies you're looking at here. If you look at the companies that South African investors have traditionally been piling into over the past few years, in other words, the FANGs, the tech stocks, they haven't been having such a wonderful time. So they have been taking a bit of strain, and I think that's largely because the market is now discounting what they see is going to be happening to the earnings from these stocks over the next few years in terms of their cash flows as interest rates start rising. And as a result, I think you're seeing results from, how can I put it, the more traditional type of U.S. stocks actually looking an awful lot better. So maybe you're seeing a bit of a rotational shift into those kind of stocks. As far as the U.S. economy is per se is concerned, the figures that came out today suggesting there was, it was a contraction. There may have been a bit of an aberration in that one. We have to wait for next quarter's figures to really confirm if that's going to be the case. So, look, the U.S. economy still looks relatively strong, relatively healthy. So I wouldn't get too carried away right now. There are a lot of extraneous factors that are causing this, not the least of which is the conflict in Ukraine. So, there are seeming discontinuities out there, but, you know, if you analyze it a little bit further, maybe not so much.
Dale, how are you digesting the economic data versus the corporate earnings? And just from that quarter one decline in the U.S. economy, would you say that we're getting ahead of ourselves if we take these numbers and then go ahead and assume that there's going to be a recession that's coming?
Yeah, I don't think, as Chris pointed out, I don't think you can take these numbers in isolation and, you know, carry it forward and believe that, you know, we're going to see a recession. There were some anomalies, you know, a surge in imports, a decline in exports, you know, some softer government spend, etc., contributing. Well, the consumer generally was relatively robust in the U.S., and I think that probably still holds true and bodes relatively well for maybe growth into the next couple of quarters. But yes, it's something you have to be worried about in a rising rate environment, that at some point, yeah, if rates rise too fast and too high, that you do trigger a recession. But if you look at markets, I do think you'll always see some disconnect between what corporates report and the underlying economy of a particular country, because a lot of these companies are global. I think you've also got to distinguish those companies that have pricing power to pass on inflation versus those who are obviously having to absorb increased costs. We saw that in Amazon, for example, where, you know, increased costs certainly weighed negatively. I think it's going to be a combination of those factors that are also worth watching as companies continue to report results.
Lots of moving parts there. Let's go on to our viewer questions. So we have one on Naspers. After today's big turnaround of Naspers and actually Tencent, will your guess, without explaining, each give a percentage of what they think Naspers will grow further to the end of the year? I feel like I want an explanation, though. Chris, on your side, further upside on Naspers?
Yeah, look, I think there is further upside. I mean, again, Dale will be able to give me a better view than I can on this one. Naspers must be down, 40% year to date? Well, not so much year to date, over the past year, could I say. So it's got a lot of leeway to make up. And obviously much of that is dependent on Tencent in China. I take a somewhat different view on China. I think the Chinese economic miracle is largely over, largely predicated on incredibly bad demographics, worse than those in Japan. The fact that the Chinese consumer is just not spending and probably isn't going to spend. You chart Chinese consumer spending as a percentage of GDP over many, many years, it's still in secular decline. And although the Chinese Communist Party is trying desperately to change that, it's having absolutely no effect whatsoever. So I think we're going to see that continuing. We're going to see a continuation of the Chinese feverishly trying to keep their exports up. In other words, keeping it as very much an export-oriented economy, even though they would love it to be a consumer-oriented economy. And if you take that as being the background that's going to occur, then I think an awful lot of these consumer stocks are not going to have such a wonderful time. Yes, I think it was overdone, and I think they will bounce. They will go higher. How much higher? I haven't the foggiest idea. But I think Tencent and Naspers will join in that.
So with that, Chris, you say that the Chinese economic miracle is basically over. With that then, with the Chinese government saying that, you know, it's pledging to give support to the economy, does that then not do much to soothe investor fears?
Well, it does. But again, you know, how much can they do? I mean, they're going to they're going to drop rates. They're going to accommodate the banks. They're going to try very, very hard to get a much greater degree of consumer spending into that economy. But you know what? If the Chinese consumer really doesn't want to spend, and there are many structural reasons why he doesn't want to spend, because the Chinese consumer doesn't actually feel secure about the longer term situation. In other words, when they start approaching retirement, for example, the situation in China is really, really not good at all. So they really have to spend and they have to save an awful lot of money. And that's really what it comes back to, is saving rather than spending. And to change that paradigm takes decades.
Dale, on a scale of 1 to confident, where are you as an investor on China?
Yeah, China, I'm not too bearish in the short term, let me say for the remainder of this year, because I do think we're likely to see the government do what it can to certainly going into its conference later this year, etc., to make the economy bounce back off these negative impacts of hard lockdowns, etc. But yes, I do think Chris has raised some important points about the medium-term prospects for China that do obviously weigh on one's view, and that potentially negatively impacts views around commodities. But if I can add, just today's bounce in Tencent, etc., I think obviously we're seeing a lot of volatility in this space, not just in the Chinese tech names, but the global tech names. And I think that's going to be the order of the day. And I think today's, the reports that I saw indicated that, there was some commentary out that, government would offer some more support and give some regulatory certainty to these internet platform businesses, etc. But, as easily as that, those sort of news stories are positive on a day like today, tomorrow the opposite could be true. So, I think that's certainly underpinning not just Tencent, I think a few of the other names in Chinese tech names, and that obviously flows into Naspers and Prosus. But volatility will be the name of the game, and therefore I'm not prepared to put my head on a block and say that, it will be up X percent by the year end. If I had that crystal ball, I'd probably be on the beach in the Caribbean or something.
Yeah. And markets are really so fickle at the moment because they really seem to be going about whatever headlines are out there or whatever comments are out there. Let's talk about Twitter, a company that has been in the headlines for weeks. Someone's asking, is Twitter worth buying? I mean, it still is a public company. I think the last time I checked, the share price was at like 49 Rand, and Elon Musk is going to buy out shareholders at $54.20 a share. Chris, your take?
Be very careful of anything that Elon Musk touches. Don't get me wrong, I've got the most immense regard and respect for this guy. He really is, as far as I'm concerned, an absolute unmitigated genius. However, when it comes to things like this, I can't help feeling that he's having fun with Twitter. Mm. You know, he's playing with management that really is not a very good management team. And I think he's highlighted and exposed a lot of the deficiencies within Twitter. So, you know, he's threatening to allow free speech. I'm not entirely sure he's actually going to go through with the deal. There are really? Many ways he can pull out of it.
But there's $1 billion at stake here, Chris.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that he's had big, mega billion-dollar bets on things and kind of walked away from them. So, look, I really hope he does. I really hope he does buy it, and I hope he transforms it. But, you know, it's an awful lot of money to pay for something that, frankly, I think is a fairly worthless platform as it currently stands.
Yeah.
I mean, it needs an awful lot of work done to it. And it doesn't make an awful lot of money. Yeah. Simple as that. So I think he's right. I think it needs a lot of work done to it. But I'm not entirely sure he's going to follow through. But I don't know. I could be wrong, and I hope I am wrong.
Yeah. Going by my mistake earlier of Twitter being at 49 Rand a share, my director's ready to buy the whole thing. My apologies there, $49. Adele, your take on that deal. So basically, Chris is also saying that, you know what, Twitter has faced a lot of challenges as it stands. What do you think then of it going private? Do you think that Elon is the right person to turn that ship around?
I'm not entirely sure, to be perfectly honest. I think it is a business that needs a lot more arrows in its quiver, if I can put it that way, in order to justify share prices that are currently on the table. And I think that's at the heart of the problem here. You know, you've seen the likes of a Facebook, etc., transform their business over time from just being Facebook to a lot of other things, and obviously pursuing things like the metaverse now, which you can still have lots of question marks about and how that's going to transpire. So for now, I think you're betting on the person rather than necessarily with any degree of certainty as to what this company's actually strategy is going to be that makes it worth what he's put on the table.
But is it wrong, though, Dale, to bet on a person?
Yeah, well, it's not always wrong, but you've got to then, you're doing it a little blind if you don't know what that stated strategy is and how they're going to transform it. So I agree, you often say, I get confidence in a particular management team that expresses their strategy, but I still want to know what that strategy is on which I'm actually making that assessment.
Yeah.
And at this stage, I'm not sure we know what that strategy is. Actually is.
Yeah. Earlier on, Dale, we were talking about the U.S. economy, and you actually mentioned that the U.S. consumer is quite robust. Let's go on to South Africa, and I don't think that is the same story from what we've been seeing. We had updates yesterday from Dis-Chem and Clicks talking about a tough trading environment and also a constrained consumer. How are you looking at retail in this environment with consumer pockets quite tight at the moment? Dale?
I'm not sure the stocks are terribly expensive necessarily, but I do agree that some of the easy money is probably being made in that space. They are off the lows that we saw, and I do worry about the consumer. I think guys that are able to play maybe some down trading probably are better positioned. But yes, I do remain somewhat concerned about the consumer. Probably prefer banks over retail at this particular point in time. But I do think that we could see well-positioned players continuing to do relatively well despite a weak consumer environment.
All right. So in this tough consumer environment, Dale, you'd rather go for banks over retail. Chris, your take, where would you be looking for opportunity here?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Dale there. However, having said that, you look at Clicks results yesterday. I watched the the webcast. Mm. And it was interesting. I mean, I do think that both Clix and Diskim are hideously overpriced relative to the kind of earnings that we've seen out of them recently. I must admit, the Clix earnings that came out yesterday actually did take me a bit by surprise on the upside yesterday. Mm-hmm. And long may it continue. Although I think there were a couple of one-offs in there that would come back. But nevertheless, look, Clix is a really, really good operation in the sense that it's very, very consistent. And I think those earnings are very sustainable into the future. Never going to really shoot the lights out, but I think why it's so highly rated is because it's consistent. So that can't be said for an awful lot of other retailers out there. If I look at the clothing retailers, only two stand out. And that's TFG particularly and Mr. Price. I mean, they are doing phenomenally well in an incredibly tough environment. I think Truworths will really struggle to get any kind of top-line growth, and that applies to any other pretty much clothing retailer. When it comes to the food retailers, there's only one as far as I'm concerned, and it's called ShopRite. So I think you have to be incredibly selective when it comes to the retailers. It's going to remain very, very tough out there. There's not a lot of money around. The ability to supply credit is severely constrained. So, no, look, it's going to remain extremely tough. And with 1.5%, maybe 2% growth coming out of the South African economy, it's not a very conducive background for robust earnings out of the consumer stocks generally.
Yeah. All right. So you were talking about Clix results, but now they direct competitors. Where would you be looking for opportunity there, Clix or Diskim?
You know, I'm always deeply conflicted between these two because as a shopping destination, I greatly prefer Diskim over Clix. I mean, there's just no comparison. Mm. The pricing is better. The ranging is better. Everything about it is significantly better. And yet, you look, I mean, since listing, Diskim has been absolutely diabolical. Yeah. It's been shocking. It really has. It's disappointed in the extreme. And I'm not entirely sure why. So that's the problem. That's why I say I'm deeply conflicted in this one. It doesn't have anything like the consistency that Clix has got. Clix, as I say, never shot the lights out, even when it had people like June Kritzinger in charge. So, you know, I think Bertina Engelbrecht has got big shoes to fill. She's been around for a long time, and she knows her stuff. She's very, very good. Mm-hmm. And I think she's very well equipped to do it. So it's going to be, I mean, they've only had six CEOs since inception back in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. So again, comes back to consistency. If I had to choose, definitely I would choose Clix as my preferred investment company. But when it comes to shopping experience, Diskim every time.
Dale, we've seen quite a divergence in those share price movements. I mean, just even yesterday, Clix ended the day in the red, and Diskim was in the green, up, I think, over 2.5%. That divergence in the share price, is it just, or those share price movements, rather, is it just because they're at different stages of growth?
You would argue that certainly, you know, Clix has a head start on Diskim from a growth point of view, and still aggressively rolling out stores to some extent. And obviously, I think a broader store format than what Diskim has traditionally put in the market, although I think that they have started moving to smaller formats. The market's got a lot more confidence to some extent, and therefore tends to put a slight premium on Clix over Diskim.
Yeah.
Maybe just, you know, the result yesterday, as Chris pointed out, had a few one-offs in it, and because they were giving guidance that, you know, expect some softness in a tougher trading environment at balance of their year, you know, I think that may be what weighed on the market, perhaps. And obviously, you know, we'll have to wait to see, you know, as to how Diskim, when they actually report numbers rather than a trading statement, whether, you know, they confirm a little bit more of that detail and, you know, maybe they'll bear the consequences as Clix did.
Mm. I'm asking you to choose because I asked Chris the same thing. So he said shopping experience Diskim, but investment case Clix. Where are you?
I'm not in either because I tend to agree that they don't look particularly cheap at this point in time. I think they're a defensive play, so I'm loath to try and pick either, to be perfectly honest.
All right, okay. Let's move on to banking. There's a question here. Are you also excited about TymeBank, which is the fastest growing bank in South Africa, with a number of customers already equaling the numbers of the largest banks to create massive value for its owners, African Rainbow Capital's share price? Quite an interesting question, because when we actually talk about the banking sector and the excitement around that, we're always talking about the big four, or rather the big five now. Chris, so what about the smaller guys like TymeBank?
Yeah, I remember going to a TymeBank presentation about 3-4 years ago that was organized by Fanzail and the guys at Arki. And this was great. We had a really fantastic insight into the workings of TymeBank. Look, this is a wonderful disruptor, and it's done a tremendous job at disrupting the very, very comfortable existence of the big banking groups in South Africa. Capitec did it for a long time, and is still doing it to an extent. But I think all over the world, you're seeing these disruptive forces having an impact on the legacy banks. And South Africa is no exception. And look, I'm not quite sure where the viewer is getting the stats from, but I mean, look, TymeBank's doing well, but it's not doing quite that well. Mm. Last I saw, it had about, maybe 4 million customers. So, I mean, that's nowhere near even the smallest of the big five. But it's growing very, very rapidly. And I think if you look at the innovation, the transactional capability that they've got in there, it really is quite phenomenal. Everything just happens so incredibly quickly. Mm-hmm. There's none of this waiting, this interminable waiting at the legacy that you have at the legacy banks. And the customer service is a different order of magnitude. Mm-hmm. So look, I think they do everything exceptionally well. And it hasn't surprised me in the slightest that they've been so phenomenally successful. And I think that's going to carry on for quite some time to come, regardless of the economic background, because they've got so many ducks in the row. The tie-up with TFG, the tie-up with Pick and Pay, it's brilliant.
Yeah. All right, so there are all these players in the boxing ring fighting for market share in that retail banking space, and I think this was highlighted, funny that I asked you, Dale, this was highlighted by Absa appointing Ari Rautenbach as the CEO. Of course, he was the head of retail and business banking at Absa. But what kind of impact then, Dale, do you think that TymeBank could have in this retail banking space? I think Chris was basically like, you know what, it's marginal. What's your take?
No, at this stage, I think it is marginal in terms of the impact it's having. But I do think it has an impact, and as Chris pointed out, Capitec also had that significant impact. They bring a lower cost structure in terms of being able to deliver their services, and ultimately that continues to put pressure on certain fee structures that the big incumbent banks tend to have to manage. Yes, the big banks obviously have a broader portfolio of offering to the consumer, and that tends to keep them. You know, so people end up being multi-banked potentially if they're looking for vehicle finance or home finance, etc. And clearly that is a place where the big banks do make money. But I do think at the margin it does disrupt and does put pressure. And I think the bigger banks have to continue to focus heavily on cost structures, branch networks, etc. to remain competitive compared to these emerging disrupting banks.
There's a question here for someone that follows Quilter. Can you please inform me as to when is the last day to buy Quilter shares to qualify for the special payment of 4 rand 1 cent? Dale?
I tell them to go double check on the circular that's on Quilter's website, but if I read it correctly, it was the 20th of May. Was the last day to trade.
All right. Okay, let's move on to your stock picks. Dale, sticking with you.
My stock pick for today will be Sappi. Yes, not the greatest quality business, but given the market dynamics that we see in terms of graphic paper pricing in Europe and obviously DWP pricing, you know, they're in a very strong position to print very strong earnings, certainly for this quarter to the end of March. I think their June quarter will be slightly disrupted by the Natal floods, But given that the currency is now at, you know, close to 16 to the dollar, that will be somewhat of an offset as well. And I think they're going to produce very strong earnings in the next couple of quarters. So it looks rather cheap on a PE multiple.
All right. And Chris, on your side, your stock pick for today?
Going with a little speculative punt called Merafe, ferrochrome producer. And, you know, they're sitting on a PE of, I think, less than three. So at this point in time, and you know, the only, I think the only negative is the fact that, you know, it gets supplied by Eskom. So, you know, there could be a bit of disruption as far as power supply is concerned. But other than that, you know, the outlook looks really bright for ferrochrome. And I don't think the market is fully discounting the potential for this particular commodity.
Right, I'm with you there. Also got myself some Merafe during the week. Thank you very much to the both of you. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, independent analyst Chris Gilmore and Dale Hutchison from APSA Asset Management. From me, Zanati Puma, and the rest of the team, have a great weekend.